You're listening to Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM. This is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. To be a part of our program, dial toll-free 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Then you can talk to our hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
Good morning, everybody. It's a Monday. Welcome in. Hope you had a great Father's Day weekend. This is Tony Bean, Vice President for Student Life and Christian Worldview at North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference. Back from her vacation, back from some other planet, it's Hannah Miller, my co-host.
Outspokenly opinionated and unashamedly conservative, this is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid, and sporting a nice tan now. A little bit, not really.
I'm starting to say, what? That's a tan?
A little bit. You have a nice olive tone. I just get red in the summer, so I got a little bit of one where it's not quite red.
It's not a fair comparison.
It's not.
My skin tone's a little different. Did you have a good vacation?
We did. We were in Cape San Blas, which is in the Gulf. So
it's you're in what?
Cape San Blas. So it's in the Gulf, and we went down, and it was basically like this tiny, tiny, tiny peninsula that went into the Gulf. Uh-huh. And you would drive down, and it was maybe 50 yards across in some places. I mean, it was tiny, but it was a lot like Edisto, except for smaller. So
they have like houses and hotels and things.
No, they had houses and condos, but that was it. It was not commercialized at all. That you had to drive 30 minutes to get to the Piggly Wiggly.
Well, I would think.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about. It sounds like a walk board or something out in the middle.
Pretty much is what it was.
Wow.
We drove in and it was like you could see on the GPS. It's like 11 o'clock at night, so it's totally dark.
Oh, yeah.
And you saw on the GPS this tiny strip and then just ocean and ocean. And I was like, boy, you better stay right here. Because if you don't, we are gone.
Is it even big enough to have a landing strip? I mean, what is it, connected by a bridge?
It's a peninsula. Yeah, okay, so it curves around, though, so it actually kind of hugs the...
I got to go back to school.
Anyway.
Peninsula, I get it. It's connected to a landmass. I know.
Three sides of water.
I got it. All right, so Father's Day. Did you have a good Father's Day?
We did. We did come home in time. We got home about mid-afternoon yesterday, and we zipped over to my brother's to have a family celebration with my family, so it was nice.
Good. Yeah, Denise, I had to write papers all weekend. But Denise was very sweet. She did a low country boil on Saturday night.
So you got to feel like you were kind of at the beach for Father's Day.
Allison and Josh came over, and then Amber and came and brought the kids, and they spent the weekend. And so we did that, and then we went out to eat yesterday after church. And yesterday at church, man, they went all out at New Spring yesterday.
Oh, did they?
For dads. They had to stand up for like 2 minutes and talked about how wonderful we all were.
You cry?
Yeah. Do what?
Did you cry?
No.
It was a near miss, I'm sure.
No. I knew all that stuff, so it really didn't affect me.
I knew
me
it
that
was
much.
Awesome.
But I mean, it was really nice. They asked our kids if they were there to put their hands on our shoulders and pray over us.
Oh, wow.
Now that...
So
that,
I was going to
yeah,
say,
that,
yeah,
that, that,
like,
that
don't tell
it.
Me you didn't
no,
cry.
No, that was it. Especially my daughters. My goodness. They're the sweetest things on the planet, and they love their daddy. And so
I loved Amber's post yesterday where she posted this great picture of you guys in the convertible. She's like, my dad's not a normal dad. He's a cool dad. And then she listed, and he drives a motorcycle, and he has a convertible and all
she was really sweet. Allison was too. And then we went out to the Red Bull.
Red Bull.
I'd never been there.
You've never been there.
I didn't even know about it. Oh. I know about it now. And they're going to probably get a lot of my money because that was like,
good. And
oh my gosh.
They're not like super expensive either.
No,
they're
it's
very reasonable.
It's great. I mean, lunch was like $7.65 or something.
And you get a ton of food.
Yes.
Big plate.
I was real impressed. And it's not your typical, I'm going to make somebody mad. But I mean, a lot of Chinese places you go in, they just have that. They have that aroma. Should we say? But this is not. I mean, it's just different.
It's very nice. Right? And they have different items on the menu too. So it's very. You go in and I think is it actually Thai? No, it's not Thai.
No. It's Asian. That's what they call it.
Asian. Okay.
So there's Japanese. There's Chinese. There's
couple
sushi.
Of different...
They got a sushi bar. You can go up to see me and sushi. We don't do sushi.
Well, I was going to be surprised if you said that you did sushi.
I'm not a sushi. I don't do tofu. I don't do sushi, and I don't do hummus. Because I like food to be cooked, and I don't like stuff that you just grab
sushi,
and put on a plate.
Only some sushi is not cooked.
Yeah, well, I know, but I can't
and
tell
I don't
the
eat
difference
that
with it.
Either.
So, anyway. All right, Charles wants to talk about election runoffs, so we'll bring Charles into the picture. Okay. Hello, Charles.
Good morning, Charles.
Hi, Tony, and I don't know. Yeah, I forgot your assistant's name because I'm nervous being on the air.
Hannah.
It's fine.
Actually, you're her assistant, aren't you?
Yes,
that's very true.
I'm Hannah's assistant,
right.
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Hannah. A happy day after Father's Day or 364 before next Father's Day.
That's correct.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this Liebreit, now that it's official, Liebreit and William Timmons runoff. Liebreit is known as a loose cannon, but he is absolutely the most conservative state representative or senator that I've seen since I've been in South Carolina. It's now 13 years, and he's tough. He's like Ted Cruz. He'll go right in your face. And say the things that need to be said about the good old boys and the deep state and the swamp. On the other hand, William Timmons says the same things in his ads, and he's got unlimited money to buy ads. And he's like a typical rhino. He says all the things that South Carolina rhinos say in the primaries to get elected. But if you really want to know about the real William Timmons, go to the Greenville Tea Party site, greenvilleteaparty.org, and click on GHS Exposé, and then there's another link you click on when you get there. But the Greenville Health System, if it were privatized by competitive bid, could have netted as much as $5.5 billion for the Greenville taxpayers who financed it. But instead, it was sold to a group of Chicago-based people with affiliations with the Obamas and Axelrod up there. And it was sold for $1 a year for 100 years. Now, in reaction to the Tea Party putting this up, Timmons has threatened Presley Stutz. He's a good friend of mine. I know this is true. And I've actually been in Fitz News. He's threatened to crucify him. They've gone after radio stations to keep the thing quiet. He said, I'll crucify you if you keep talking about this.
Yeah, Charles, let me tell you something. I don't think I sent Lee a text message over the weekend and asked him to come on the show. So I think he will at some point before the runoff. I'm not sure. But anyway, I really think Lee's going to win. I know you don't take anything for granted. But I just don't think we're in a time and place in the 4th District where William Timmons is going to win. I think Lee's margin of victory in the election, in the actual first round, was considerable. And I just think as long as people who voted for him come out and vote for him again, and I think a lot of people will, because in the age of Trump, people who are Trump enough to get elected are going to get the people out to vote for them. So I think, I agree. I think nobody should take anything for granted. I agree that Lee is the most conservative person left in the 4th District race. He's more conservative than Timmons. And so that's what it'll come down to, as it always comes down to in a runoff, is who gets out, who goes to the polls. There's not going to be a whole lot of new people go. It just doesn't. I mean, if it does, that'd be shocking to me, and that'd be the first time.
Has Josh endorsed him?
I don't know. I talked to Josh the day after the election. I don't know if Josh is going to endorse anybody. I just don't. I honestly don't know.
Would,
I haven't talked to him since.
That would swing it, because if he gets all of Josh's votes, if Timmons gets all of Josh's votes and all of Dan Hamilton's votes, Dan Hamilton also voted wrong on GHS, and he's pretty feckless from what I understand. Then you add
I think
you add the second, third, and fourth place finishers' votes, and you've got 50% right there, just about.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of people have endorsed Lee. Dan Hamilton is an honorable guy. I have great respect for him, and I appreciate
it. I don't think he's too courageous, though.
Well, I know, but I wouldn't call him feckless. I just don't. I'm going to do my best to talk in terms of political alliances and conservative versus progressive, and of course nationalist, which is more of the Trump genre. Instead of calling people, I just don't want to call people names.
Okay, I rescind that.
I know.
Dan
and I, look, Charles,
I've known him for 13 years.
I know it,
and
Charles.
He seemed like a good guy.
He is a good, and that's what I mean.
I do want to say this though. Yeah. This group, which is basically the Chicago Obama Mafia, Chicago Obama Mafia, as I call it, but they have gone after the politicians that have stood up to them. They have smeared them. They have put up primary opponents against every one of them that had a primary.
Well, and you know, Charles, here's the thing:
intimidated radio stations into not talking about this.
I know
that's a fact.
Charles, I know. I'm not arguing with you, and I appreciate your call. We're out of time. We got to take a break. But look, there was a lot of smearing going on in this fourth district run, in the governor's race. Politics is what it is, and I'm not going to sit here and try to convince people that it's never been like this before. It's always been like this to some degree. It's just gotten worse. Public discourse and what people are willing to do to hurt another person, the standard for all of that has gone out the window, and it's basically up to what anybody wants to say or do. And that's unfortunate, because these are important decisions. They should be made in an atmosphere of respect, not an atmosphere of vitriol and trying to tear each other apart with some of the things that happened in this fourth district race, particularly what was done to Josh, but also to other candidates in the race. I mean, it was not exclusively about Josh, although he suffered a lot of it because of a lot of the lies and the stuff that was told over about him and the mischaracterizations. But it was going on about other candidates as well. We had to have John Warren on here to talk about the fact that, you know, he's pro-life because of the way they twisted his words. Now, that's politics, but it would be better if the atmosphere could get a little clearer. All right, Mike, we'll talk to you when we come back. Stay with us.
Here's your host, Dr. Tony B.
All right, welcome back. My co-host is Hannah Miller.
Good morning.
And Mike's on the phone. Hello, Mike.
Hey, hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, you know, there's a saying, anyone who wants to be a politician is already corrupt. But I don't necessarily believe that.
Well, you shouldn't believe it, because we do have a lot of good people that run for office, and a lot of them get elected. We've got some from South Carolina. We have some stellar representatives, and we have some serving in Columbia and some in Washington. So we shouldn't be completely bummed out by people who run for office, because there's some that do a really good job. But anyway, yes, go ahead.
I'm shocked that Josh Kimbrell's numbers wasn't higher. I voted for him. And I know there was ads ran against him. And in my estimation, if I was running for a politician and people were running ads against me, I think what I would do would just respond to the ads if they were false. I don't think necessarily I would run an ad against them at all. I would just respond to false ads. What say you?
Well, I don't particularly like negative advertising. I don't mind exposing people's record if there's something that should be said about, or if they're, let's say candidate A goes out and starts touting a record that's false. And if candidate B wants to run an ad pointing out that candidate A is misrepresenting themselves by, say, you know, then I'm okay with that. But personal things, personal attacks, private lives, for the most part, stuff like that just ought to be off bounds and out of bounds. And here's the thing, Mike, when somebody attacks you negatively, to answer that is extremely difficult because, you know, there's an old saying, and I can't remember exactly how it goes, but a lie can travel halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to put his pants on.
Boots.
Boots, pants, whatever.
Whatever.
The bottom line is that the truth has a lot of trouble keeping up with a lie, because lies are salacious. And we have a sin nature that causes us to naturally gravitate toward things that are not true. We're not naturally drawn to the truth, but we're naturally drawn to our baser nature. So that makes it very difficult.
But it used to be called slander. I don't know what happened to that, I guess.
Well, you can't slander. You really can't slander a public official. I mean, I could slander you. Let's say you're running a business, and I come in and I make false statements about your business and about you, and I cause you to actually lose money because of false statements. I can be charged with slander. But you can't. I mean, a politician is pretty much. It's really hard to slander a public figure. Because once you put yourself out there, particularly in political discourse, almost anything is okay. And that leads to the environment that we're in. It's not very good. But anyway, Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Did you want to add anything to that?
Well, I just was going to quote Proverbs 26:4, which is, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be just like him." And I think when we're talking about these kinds of situations, that can be applied, where not necessarily foolishness, but when you respond to somebody like that, because you begin to get into this back and forth. And I think that's what the scriptures are discouraging us from doing, is getting into this back and forth of foolishness, of calling names and going after one another, and we just should try to, as far as we can and are able, steer clear of that.
Yeah, and let me just say this. If you're ever going to run for political office, just know this. Every word that you've ever spoken that can be tracked down will be tracked down and used against you. Every post you've ever put, I mean, you think
it's
stuff goes away
going
from
to get
social
ugly.
Media?
It's going to get ugly in the next 20 years, because there will be a generation that comes up who were so feckless with their Facebook and their social media, and things that they have said and done and didn't think about in their immature years are going to come out as they're running for office and as they're trying to have leadership positions, and it's going to be awful.
Yeah. Well, and again, we live, pull up cut number 5 over there. We live in, you know, the age of Donald Trump. Now, there's, you know, and it's too complicated to get too deep into that this morning, but there are things about that that are good, and there are things that are very bad. And one of the things about that that's very bad is the atmosphere that's been created, the political atmosphere, the standard that's been set, because the litmus test has come down to Donald Trump and whether you support him wholeheartedly, because anything else, you know, policy, ideas, things like that, people hear them, but they've been hearing it forever. So they just go, okay, what I really want to know is, do you support Donald Trump? Mark Sanford said this pretty well yesterday on Meet the Press.
Plenty of blame to go around, but if you boil it down, I wasn't Trump enough in the age of Trump. And, yeah, so in that regard, he certainly had a hand in it.
And Katie Arrington was, you know, and listen, she's a great candidate. I mean, I think she'll serve very well in the United States House. It's not that I'm lamenting the fact that Mark Sanford's not going to be going to Washington. What I lament is the standard by which people are measuring other people. And it often doesn't it has very little to do with who they are or what their ideas are.
There was something else that happened politically this weekend, and one of the things that I was reading about it, and I don't want to bring it up because it's a whole thing. But anyway, somebody responded to something and said, "Hey, you can hate Black Lives Matters and still support Black Lives. You can dislike Donald Trump and still support the things he does." And that is totally, people do not understand that whatsoever. You know, they're like, if you can't they don't understand that I can dislike that the NFL is kneeling, but still support maybe what they're kneeling, like maybe what they're trying to do. I just don't think it's the right place. And people don't understand that. It's all or nothing across the board.
Yeah,
and they're exactly right with the Donald Trump thing. It's all or nothing. If you're not sold out Donald Trump, no matter what he does, no matter what he says, then you're just feckless and you're a hater.
Right.
And, you know, that's just the language that they use.
I know. And that's, I mean, it's been really weird because, I mean, you know, I have no doubt that the stance that I've taken here on this program has hurt me in some mm-hmm. people's eyes because, you know, I don't turn Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah before that Christian Worldview Today into a platform for, you know, Trump.
Well, it's one or two. You're either Trump train or never Trump. Like that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, there's nothing in the middle.
There's nothing in the middle. But the reality is that there is, and we're allowed to be there.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I just think, and I think that in that environment, that because Lee Bright is a bulldog type of conservative. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no question about it. He goes. I don't know that I'd compare him to Ted Cruz. But he goes after the things that he believes in with a straight on, take it on, you know, bull in a china shop type of attitude. And that's a very popular,
yeah, it's a little
politically popular attitude right now.
It is.
It's
reminiscent of Donald Trump. And so I was not surprised when Lee Bright took the district in the elections this week. I know I was gone, but it didn't come as a surprise because some of the things and his attitudes and how he conducts himself is reminiscent of him, of Donald Trump.
And there's no question about it. Anybody that would question Lee's conservative credentials, I mean, that's not valid. Lee is a conservative. Mm-hmm. The things that he believes and the things that he advocates for are absolutely within, I mean, they're very conservative. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, I think, you know, the Tea Party, for example, and this is, I'm just talking political analysis here. The Tea Party, the Greenville Tea Party, I was stunned when I found out, when the question was asked William Timmons, you know, did he give $1,000 to Lindsey Graham? Mm-hmm. I mean, the Senator Graham's campaign. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, well, that's the kiss of death for somebody who is trying mm-hmm. to run as a conservative, particularly here in the upstate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's fascinating because Lindsey Graham keeps getting elected over and over again and by considerable margins,
mm-hmm.
but, it, you know, on a statewide level. In fact, Lee Bright ran against Senator Graham, mm-hmm. and I think Lee was in second place. But it was never, you know, that much of a contest, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that fascinates me politically because you can be connected to Senator Graham and be absolutely anathema,
particularly
if you're running as a conservative, trying mm-hmm. to win a conservative district. And we
but
do
he
have
gets
to keep in
elected
mind.
Elected again and again.
Yeah, but we do need to keep in mind Lindsey Graham would not get elected if he was running for the 4th district.
Right.
Now,
yeah,
you know,
specifically
the 4th district. And so for the 4th district, being as conservative as it is in Spartanburg and Greenville, Lee Bright is, I mean, his conservatism is, and the way that he aggressively expresses it is that the two things, the district is conservative and we live in the age of Trump where that type of aggression is rewarded. So I think those two things together mean that Lee Bright's going to win this runoff. I mean, predicting a runoff is difficult because it's all about who goes and votes, and it's hard to get people out again. They just, you know, mm-hmm. people in people's minds that don't live this stuff mm-hmm. every day, they're like,
they go out, they
oh, wait a minute,
thing.
I did that. I've done it. I already did that. I voted.
Yeah.
Well, you got to come back out again. What? It's almost like you're trying to yell at them across
right.
a pond or something.
Right. Right.
What? Vote what? I already did that. No, you got to go out and vote again. Oh, no, I don't. You know, I mean, it's
right.
just it for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so the turnout will be less for this than it was for the runoff. And you only had about 20% 4th district yeah. turnout of registered Republicans for the regular primary. So, all right, let's take a break and we'll come back. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. I want to talk about this immigration kerfuffle that Democrats think that they've got a winning hand on this, and they just might. I'll tell you why when we come back.
Here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Beam.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thanks for listening this morning. This is Tony Beam.
This is Hannah Miller.
You know, I wonder sometimes, Hannah, honestly, you know, as I get older and as I do my best to try to get closer to the Lord and to be as close to Him as I can, if I can keep doing talk radio. Now, I'm not, listen to me, I'm not planning on going anywhere.
Everybody's like, this is a retirement announcement.
No, there's nothing. That's not what's happening. But I'm just saying that to be successful in talk radio, you have to be dogmatic. You have to be angry. Mm-hmm. You have to be accusatory. And those are things that sometimes I'm guilty of, but I'm always convicted about.
Right.
And I don't want
something
to be that person.
Something you're trying to steer away from.
Because I don't want to live my life at 110 miles an hour, mad all the time. And sometimes you can't turn that off. I mean, you come at people who, like, if I come in here and I'm mad for 2 hours over something, it's not like I'm going to walk out the studio and leave all that behind. I mean, I'm carrying that with me throughout the day. And so I'm really trying to do my, the whole Trump thing has brought a new perspective to me, realizing that it's possible to overreact to situations and overcorrect. I mean, it's like driving down the road and you start to veer off to the right and you go, okay, well, I got to get back in the, and you overcorrect and you end up going off the left side of the road. And that's a classic example to me of what happens in politics today. We were so reactive to President Obama and so determined that and we got so angry over 8 years of Obama and the love affair between him and the media that we've overreacted with the election of Donald Trump. And I don't mean that Trump was an overreaction, his election. But I'm saying that as a result of the election of Donald Trump and the way that he has tapped into, because a large part of his success has been to tap in to that anger and that overcorrection.
Well, and the scriptures tell us in Proverbs, you know, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty.
Yeah.
And he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. And that's, you know, when you and I are looking at all this, you're exactly right. It's hard to do this when they expect you and they want you to get fired up and angry about all these things.
Sure. And if you
don't.
And
that's what makes good listening according to what people like.
If you don't, there's something wrong with you.
Right.
But I keep going back and I quoted this, you know, from the wrath of man does not bring about
That's
the righteousness
right.
of God. That keeps going through my head over and over and over again. And so I try to look at things and now and say, okay, where's the truth here?
Well,
here's a bunch of fire. Here's a bunch of smoke. Here's a bunch of spin. What's really going on
That's
here?
That's right. And when we look at this, but for, again, going back to our previous discussions, though, when it's either you're never Trump or you're Trump trained and there's no in-between, sometimes the truth is found in the in-between. And we have to put all those things aside. And a lot of people just don't understand that. But see, that takes work. And it takes discernment. And it takes wisdom. And it's hard. And we don't like to do hard things. We don't like to have to peel back all the layers and find out what the truth is underneath everything. And that's why it's easy to get caught up in our emotions and to just be angry about something or to love something, because that's easy.
One of the things that I hope people can understand, if you're really good at something, but it's not the season for that thing, it really doesn't matter. I mean, I'll give an example. Suppose you make the best cassette players in the world.
Yeah.
When you make a cassette tape player, it is the epitome and the absolute top of cassette player making. Who cares? Nobody buys cassette players. Nobody uses them anymore. All right? You can be a policy genius. You can come up with plans and actions and advocate and communicate them in a way that's clear and persuasive. But if policy is not what drives people in the political process, then it doesn't matter. See, in fact, it's the opposite. If you have policy issues that are good and you're out advocating and you're articulate, you're the establishment.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that makes you the establishment. It's almost like at one point where there were the black leadership in this country were saying, well, if you wear a navy blue suit with a red tie, that's racist, because that's a symbol of our oppression. People who wear those are all the same. I mean, it's like a certain thing, if once it becomes passes out of style, if you're still pounding away with that thinking that this is what's going to cause people to listen, and you don't get the fact that all you got to do. I mean, I've watched this in the debates, and maybe you were there, obviously, for one of them, but you would hear people begin to passionately articulate and say the right thing, you know, good stuff.
Right.
More, I mean, and I'm talking about one candidate. I mean, Josh obviously was very good at that, but I'm talking about there were several that could do that. So I'm listening to them and I'm watching people and they're just sitting there.
They're totally glazed over. There's a guy who gets up and he's like, Trump, well, and that's the key word. And they're just like, oh, yeah.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I've been in these battles and I'm going to go and I'm gonna fight, and I'm gonna. I mean, if that's and you watch the crowd. They just. I mean, it's like a crescendo. All of a sudden, they've stepped out of whatever la-la land they were in, and they're with you.
This is like, you know, part of my degree is communications, and public speaking is my thing. I love it. And, all of the training that I had through the years, through high school and into college, we always talked about the motivational speakers and the inspirational speakers versus those who did exegetical when we're talking about preaching.
Yeah.
And you go to a lot of churches these days, and there's the motivational, inspirational preachers, and people love them. I mean, they just get people fired up and so motivated and emotionally to do things, but they don't give them the meat to do it. And then you have the exegetical preachers who actually teach the word of God, and people are just like, bah.
Well, but
some of it is because they're not doing a good job of being exegetical.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, exactly. I understand that.
There are some in the middle. Like when you go listen to,
it is an art form. You have to be able to.
Herschel York.
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. York. He's now the dean of the theology department at Southern Seminary, but he's my son's pastor, my family's pastor in Kentucky at Buck Run Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. And he is an exegetical. He's going through the book of Ephesians right now. But it's great because it's
so
a combination of exegesis plus passion plus drawing you in.
I had somebody tell me when I was in college, and he said, you should never, ever, ever, you know, of course, I wasn't going to be a pastor. I was just going to, public speaking was part of it. But I was in some of the classes that a lot of the guys who were going to be pastors were. Yeah. And he told all of us, he said, look, you should never be a boring pastor because we have the best story in the world.
How can you be boring when you're talking about?
It is the best story. So anyway, with all that being said, though, when we're talking about policy, and then you're talking about somebody who just has this rhetoric, I'm going to go and fight. In politics, we do have to, unfortunately, have a good marriage of both of those.
Bobby, come on in.
Sorry, Bobby.
No, you're fine. I just wanted to be a little bit of encouragement to you this morning and let you know that your place is not to change anybody. It's to get the truth out. And we're called to be light, and the light always shines. And I appreciate what you do. Civility, I think, at the end of the day, is going to win. Maybe not in the short term, but we look back at the prophets in the Old Testament. Look at Isaiah and Jeremiah. You know, they were foretold that their message was not going to be heard, and they were good to tell anyway. And so that's our responsibility. You guys are doing something that nobody else on talk radio is doing, and your foundation is the truth, and that's what matters. You keep putting the truth out there, and it'll make a difference.
Thanks, Bobby. I appreciate that very much. Here, before we go to the break, let me say this because I don't want to be misunderstood. I'm not saying and I want to be clear about that. I'm not saying that Lee Bright has done anything wrong or is not sincere. Lee Bright is very sincere in his conservative convictions. There's nothing wrong with him, you know, being in tune with where people are and tapping into that. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. So I'm just saying that that's where we are. I'm trying to describe the political milieu of the day. But let me just say this. Here's the danger. There is a danger to it, is if it's just emotion and it's not backed up with well thought out policy. And I'm not saying that anybody's doing that. I'm just saying here in general, this is the danger, is that if you have a lot of heat and a lot of emotion and you don't back it up with thoughtful policy change, or go, you know, make the argument in a way that is persuasive in terms of getting things done, then that can be a bad thing.
Well, you'll be like the double-minded man of James, who's tossed around with the wind every which way.
Well, I don't know that it's – I hear you. I don't know that it's double-mindedness, though. I don't think that's
what it's not necessarily double-mindedness.
It's a matter of sometime let's see if I can put it this way. At some point, if you're a cheerleader, you have to get in the game. In other words, mm-hmm. the cheerleaders don't determine the outcome. They just simply get everybody, you know, in the right focus and pumped up. But they're not – they don't determine what happens on the field. And we've got to have people that are willing to do both, like we were talking about, or we're not going to have good policy. All right, let's take a break. And good grief. really short on the other side, heading up to the news. And then we're going to get – I promise.
We're going to talk about immigration.
Next hour, we're going to talk about immigration, and we're going to talk about all this stuff that's hitting in Washington about Peter Strzok and whether he's going to – testify before Congress. We'll get into all that. Stay with us.
Here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome in. Thanks for listening. This is Tony Bean.
This is Hannah Miller.
Let me recommend an article to you. It's a big one. I mean, it's probably 5,000 words or so. But it's Tony Mesilla in this week's Weekly Standard. And it's called — the title of it is Reefer Madness. Oh. Colorado legalized marijuana in 2014 and the pot rushes on. But the ERs are filling up, and a generation of kids is at risk. So it's it tells you about marijuana in Colorado. It kind of gives you the kind of an up to date what's actually happening. I mean, marijuana sales, the industry in Colorado. Get this, it's gone from almost nothing up to $1 billion. 2014, it was $303 million. These are retail sales. Mm-hmm. And that's when they legalized marijuana, was 2014. In 2017, $1,091,000,000, 185. Mm-hmm. Is that — I can't even — those numbers are so big, I can't even read them. But anyway, it's over $1 billion in sales in Colorado. And they're talking about — it's been 3 years, almost four, and you can start to see the effects of what's happening in Colorado due to so many people smoking marijuana. And a lot of kids believing the lie that marijuana is perfectly safe. See, that's what they're being told.
Right.
And that's what the legalization of it says, that it's absolutely safe. But just like alcohol can give you cirrhosis of the liver, there are side effects to smoking marijuana that have health implications.
Aside from the fact that, you know, their mortality rates with vehicles has gone up, tripled.
Yeah. I mean, what do you — you've got a whole state full of people, and a certain percentage of them are walking around high all the time. And
of course, one of the first things they say is don't operate a motorized vehicle. Well, you know, people do DUIs all the time, and they're also now doing, I guess, I don't know, MUI, marijuana under —
driving under the influence.
Just be a DUI.
Driving while impaired.
While impaired
is what they call it. DWI. I think that's what they call it in South Carolina. So that covers anything.
Right.
But the point is that, you know, marijuana is a mind altering drug. You're in a different state. It puts you in, you know, a heightened state of awareness, but also it clouds your vision and your judgment. So I just —
here's the thing, too. I actually had a talk this week. We were on vacation, and we went on vacation with my husband's uncle, who is now the sheriff of Jefferson County in Tennessee. And I actually talked to him about this. And I talked to one of my very best friends, who is a former drug addict. And I asked her about marijuana. I said, you know, what do you think about all this marijuana stuff? And do you think that marijuana is an addictive drug? Because that's one of the very first things. Well, it's not an addictive drug. It's not an addictive drug. And she said, it's most definitely addictive. And she said, but the biggest thing, she said, is that it introduces you to a lifestyle. And then you just get sucked down a rabbit hole. And that's exactly what I've heard from countless people who work with people who are drug addicts. The very first is you know, people don't like to say that it's a gateway drug in reference to it being addictive. But what it is a gateway drug to a lifestyle that will suck you down a rabbit hole that you have no intention of going down. And then the police officer, the sheriff, told me, he said about 80% of the time when we pull somebody over and we find marijuana, they also have cocaine or heroin, or, you know, they have something else on their person that's much stronger. So he said it generally, they just all go together.
Well, heroin, cocaine, all those things, you know, they're and meth, all those are physically addicting. I mean, mm-hmm. they can your body gets to the point where it mm-hmm. has to have it. Mm-hmm. And marijuana, from what we understand, is not that way. Your body is not mm-hmm. going to crave marijuana in a way right. that it craves cocaine. But your mind is going to, it's a psychologically addicting drug mm-hmm. because you get, and that's one of the things, you know, when I was in college and I smoked marijuana for a little while, the reason that I quit is not because I wasn't a Christian in college.
Right.
The reason I quit is because I could see what was about to happen. Mm-hmm. When I was high, I wanted to be high all the time. And it was a psychological addiction. It was beginning, you know, I looked forward to getting out of class so that I could get high or, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully later that day I was going to be able to, mm-hmm. you know, get that feeling. It's a site that is psychologically addicting. And I'm telling you something, that doesn't motivate you to go out and be successful, to do mm-hmm. things for other people. All the mm-hmm. things that make society hold together are dismantled in a person mm-hmm. by marijuana use. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the real bad parts of it. All right, we've got Fox News coming up. We got another big hour. We got plenty of time to get mm-hmm. into the topics of the day, and we're going to do that. After you hear what those topics are at the top of the hour, we'll unpack them for you. So stay with us with Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah.